The nurses rolled him around the garden in his wheelchair. Sometimes one of them massaged his feet. Her hands felt soft and warm and exciting. His mother sat at a table on the patio writing letters, smoking one cigarette after another. His father was dying, growing bigger and bigger with his death, inflating and expanding until the master bedroom, no longer able to contain him, had to be enlarged by tearing down the walls and raising the ceiling, and new wings were added to the house, new annexes and extensions. They were in the garden. He sat in his wheelchair. A nurse massaged his feet. Another brought him tea with lemon and sugar. A third finished reading to him from a children's book. His mother, as manager of the troupe, was auditioning a new clown. He executed the latest pratfalls, slipping on banana peels along the patio. Above him, the huge, bloated hand of Joseph's father hung limply from his window, a vein pulsing. One of the nurses rolled Joseph down to the beach. They watched the waves, seagulls drifting in the wind above the water. Then she said, "One night, years ago, a great fish beached itself right here on the shore. People came with a net and dragged it out to sea, but it swam back and again threw itself on the sand." Joseph looked back at the house, at his mother writing her letters, at the white gloves of the clown on her shoulders, at his father's huge hand hanging from the window. "And the people returned," the nurse went on, "and drew the fish way out into the ocean. But the next morning, they found it back again on the beach." "But what does this have to do with me?" Joseph shouted. "It's a stupid story. It's complete nonsense. Why do you waste my time with it? I may be a child, but I'm not a jerk. Why don't you leave me alone with your fish stories? Really, I'm not interested. You're so boring with your parables and paradoxes." And his nurse said, "Joseph Malka, you try and do better."
Well, what do you think of that?
The picture, you mean?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know what to make of the picture. It gives me strange feelings. I have trouble with that kind of expressionistic painting. Makes me feel weird. Gives me kind of goose pimples. How about you? What do you think of it?
I think that's the point of it, you know. I mean, once art got abstract, it really had to deal mostly with the feeling. I think if you spend a lot of time looking at it, the feelings are what it's supposed to evoke, you know.
Oh, excuse me, you stepped on my foot. It's all right.
I beg your pardon.
It's all right. The picture appears to me to be as if the artist was searching for something he had lost and was trying to find again. Do you see that at all in the picture?
Well, I don't know. I find the configuration of that red down in the corner moving up toward the yellow streak, the way it vibrates, I guess, is... Well, searching, no, I don't really see that.
Searching and pain. I see...
Yes, yes, I think you're right there. Oh, yes.
Yes.
It's an extraordinary thing, isn't it?
Do you always talk so low? Or is that just the museum that makes your voice sound like that?
Well, I got my plague inoculation shots recently, and I seem to have had a small reaction to it. It's lowered my voice considerably.
Plague? I'm just recently in the city. I noticed that an unusual amount of people lying around the street with strange sores on their bodies. Is there a plague?
Yes. If you have a chance, I'd check in a medical center and get some inoculation against it. It's been going on for some time now. My maid, Claudia, died of it. It was just ghastly. I mean, the mess she made. You know, it's really very hard to find people nowadays whom you can depend on.
Yeah. See, I get going back to the picture. Mm. I prefer the more realistic types of painting.
Do you?
Yes.
Do you have any favorite painters?
Well, no favorite paintings. I'm not that familiar with art. You know, I just know what I like to see. I don't know too much about, you know, which artist drew which picture. I like the pictures of Christ quite a bit, although the scenes where he's painted with the spike through his feet, that always gives me a special strange feeling.
Really?
I don't know exactly why, the blood pouring out of the feet like that.
There's nothing in your own... I mean, you know, people respond very personally to painting, I find. And I mean, that must have some meaning for you. It just must for you to respond. What brings you to the museum?
Well, I've been moving around the country quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
And
what brought you to the city?
Well, it's kind of a long story. You see, I'm
I hope you don't feel like I'm prying.
No, it's quite all right. I'm trying to find my father.
Ah.
And I've been searching for him for quite a number of years, and I
did he desert the family?
Well, To go far back, I never really knew my father very well. He left me when I was young. He drank quite a lot and was a circus performer, and I never really knew him very well. Mm. So I'm trying to
well, this
to
is
relocate
a,
him.
A lonely city to be in.
Have you
no
always lived here?
Stuff. Yes, I was born here. I grew up here. I'm a city girl.
Yeah. My name's Ed. What's yours?
My name's Joe.
Well,
nice to meet you.
Yeah, nice to see you, Joe. You come to the museum here often?
Well, I haven't been in some time, you know. It's rather dangerous to go out these days. You have to be fairly careful of where you go. But I decided that so many people are ill that probably there wouldn't be anybody here to bother me today. I don't mean to say that I'm bothered by people. I mean, I'm very glad to meet you. Really, very.
Yeah, well, I hope I'm not bothering you. You know, I could move along if it...
Oh, no, please, no. I haven't been out recently. I'm recently separated from my husband, and I'm finding it rather hard to start a life, you know, again, as a single woman. And I enjoy talking with you.
Well, I don't know why you would find it hard. You're not that old. I mean, you're
that's
still
quite
young.
All right.
You're still young is what I meant to
well,
say.
Well, yeah. It's all in the mind. That's what they tell me.
Sir, I couldn't help wondering, are you contaminated?
Are you talking to me? Is he
yes.
talking to me?
Yes, I guess. No, he's just recently into the city. It's quite all right.
Because I must say that the clothes that you are wearing look remarkably contaminated to me. They must have been taken off a dead body, if you don't mind my saying so, sir.
Well, I don't know. Well,
it's quite clear that you
What's
don't know, and
the,
it's quite
with the,
clear.
With the clothes I'm wearing.
Well, first of all, let me just start from the bottom up, if you don't mind.
If you don't mind.
I do mind
very
much.
I do mind, too. If you don't mind moving off, I'll call a guard if you don't.
You may call all the guards you wish, but I just so happen to own the Bologna Falls Calcio Mi Stand for Stanta.
I think you're getting quite an introduction to the city at this point. No, well, you see, there are these crazy people who run around. And,
I beg your pardon, my young lady. I am most assuredly, I may be many things, but I am not crazy. And
maybe the fact that he's short has something to do with why he's butting in on our conversation.
Well, it may be that he's ill, too, with the plague.
Well, it just so happens that the most famous men in the world were all short. Napoleon was short. Alexander the Great was short.
You know,
Caesar
I really don't want to be talking to you. I wish you'd go away
there's
and leave
no
us
need,
alone.
Of course, for you to talk to me at all.
It's best really to ignore people like this.
You may ignore me all you want.
I'm going to do my best.
But any
Joe,
man who wears purple shoes, blue pants.
He has
green.
A problem with his feet. I don't think it's fair to attack persons
well,
on something.
Well, I must say, I see that he has a problem with his feet, but I had no idea that the problem would extend to the bottles on the floor.
I have just
a
maybe if we start talking about the picture again, maybe he'll go away.
This plague is driving us all mad, sir, but you are the maddest of them all.
Yes, oh,
you
are the this is really
your
interesting.
Your mind is a running
yes,
sore,
I
sir. Your face is pus,
it's very hard to hear,
obviously,
isn't it, with him
yes,
yelling
nothing.
In your ear.
Yes,
but
maybe
I really
we have some, maybe we can
brought
have him
back
move.
To life.
Well,
this
I, the problem is, you
in.
Know, that there's nobody around these
of
days.
Of course yeah, there's
well,
no one around.
In
the
Ohio,
we're
I would do it
dead.
Myself.
You're
well,
dead.
It's probably, I mean, if he really is crazy.
We're all dead here. And
the
plague is killing us all.
Well, I don't know. If so, please don't touch him.
Let's not get near him.
Just
like that in a coat like that.
Let's not get near him.
I mean, yes.
Not get near me. You've come to me.
You know, when I came in here, I found a guard retching. Perhaps we can find
someplace
safe from crazy.
No,
I mean,
safe. There's no place safe.
Oh, please leave us alone.
You.
Please leave us alone.
We've got to go.
Absolutely.
He's getting,
let's
get
out of here. Quick.
He's even
yes.
beginning to shrink.
Oh, my God. Please. Help me in. Help me. Let's go.
Mysterious foreboding in this first scene. The mood of foreboding and plague and vague danger is extreme.
And yet a germ of love in the middle of this, a seed of a possible romance, possible sensual contact. She steps on his foot. In this scene,
yes,
there's
in
physical
the
contact.
Ancient Indian mythology.
That's right. That is a proposition.
That is a proposition to step for and for a woman to step on a man's foot is a very sexual gesture.
By the way,
gesture.
Now we're on to a very central theme in the first scene, and indeed in the play, which is feet, and feet and travel.
Well, when you speak of feet, what images? What
well, all right. We had her stepping on his foot. We had the talk about his purple shoes. Now, purple is the color of royalty. His fascination with pictures of Christ's feet with blood pouring from them. Now, this is a man whose world is a real down-to-earth world where people are understandable at first glance, where the world is understandable at first glance.
That's right.
And he is in a strange, unreal world. Malk is telling us this is not the world of the real. We are in the unreal world in this scene.
And yet it's interesting because in spite of what you say, Dr. Behrens, there is an unreality about the man himself. He seems to somehow not have any kind of a grip on who he is or why he exists.
Exactly, because Malka is coming from the position that, after all, what is real? Is reality so real when it has no grip on
itself?
Yes.
That's true. Well, the supramodernistic definitions of reality have always confused me, because if reality has no understanding of itself, how indeed can it call itself reality?
Well, the supermodernist movement, as you know, is very short-lived, and I think that one of the reasons was that it had trouble dealing with its own conception.
That summer, and there was something in the air, a fever. Malka found himself distracted. He made entries in his journal. See her every day. Plump figure. Wears too much makeup. Absurd sunglasses. Wide-brimmed hats set at rakish angles. Struts around pool in bathing suit and spiked heels. About 50. Husband, former ringmaster, has had stroke, almost paralyzing one side of face and body. When they're together, she leads him about, holding him under the arm. Once pompous, he's grown meek since his illness. Speaks humbly now, sputtering out of a corner of his mouth. Whenever we talk, I feel the urge, bubbles of saliva bursting on his lips, to break into gales of laughter. I grit my teeth. She's friendly, kisses me whenever we meet, her lips lingering. Plies me with questions about my monographs and early plays. Where do I get these ideas? Why do I think these things? What will I write next? And she tells me long-winded anecdotes at which I feel constrained to laugh, twisting my face into a smile, my lungs mirthlessly exploding air. One afternoon, I stand at my window overlooking the pool, watching her swim the Australian crawl which she's just learned from the lifeguard. She swims slowly and self-consciously, her arms moving in an affectedly graceful manner. Then she sits on the steps at the shallow end and removes her cap, her bleached blonde hair bursting out and tumbling down to her shoulders. She tilts her face back to the sun, then stretches, a lithesome cat-like uncoiling, and notices me watching her. We stare at each other. A little later, still in her bathing suit, she stands in my doorway, smelling of a perfume that makes my knees go weak, words flowing out of her mouth mingled with the sounds of frogs and crickets and children playing in the pool, confusing and bewildering me. I think, in my dazed state, gazing at her through undulating waves of heat, that she's talking of having a fever, the feeling of a virus coming on. She tells me her glands are swollen, and I gaze, distracted, at her bosom, which bulges up out of her bathing suit. And then, driven by some force out of our control, we grab each other and force ourselves down on the bed, begging each other, whispering breathlessly, to stop. What do we think we're doing? What if somebody comes in? A few nights later, from my window, I see her kneel before her husband in the moonlight, bathing his feet in her tears, wiping them off with strands of her hair, kissing them, and anointing them with a solution for fungus infection. Last night, two men fought with broken bottles in the bar. Everyone's on edge.
I just adore this place. I'm so glad you had some free time and could come.
Well, I have nothing but free time. What kind of... Is this a restaurant that way?
Yeah, Chinese food. I hope you like it.
Chinese food? You mean like from From real China?
Well, it's cooked by Chinamen, you know.
So we're actually going to be able to eat Chinese food in here, right here in the city.
Oh, why don't you? I mean, you can try to use chopsticks. Do you know? You know what chopsticks are?
Yeah, you play that on the piano, don't you?
Well, yeah, that's one kind. But these are long sticks of wood, and you hold them in one hand, and you pick up your food with them. It's what the Chinese use instead of forks and knives, things like that.
Well, I hope those people over there didn't get that way from the food. You see them slumped over?
Oh, yeah. I'm so sorry, you know, but it happens everywhere.
Well, it's not your fault.
Well.
It's awful nice being here with you, though.
Yeah,
it's
well...
I like the candles. It's kind of romantic, isn't it?
Yes, it is, and it's nice and quiet, too. Yeah,
it's being in a Chinese restaurant. It's what I pictured the city to be like.
Yeah. Well, oh, dear, I'm not sure what some of these things are.
Well, I can't tell what they are. Don't they have any kind of a translation of this Husu Wap Dao?
Oh, I think I had the Ming Cho... Lang Dak once before. It's really, it's very good, you know. I don't even know what's in it.
Excuse me, you let it to order?
Yeah, okay, okay.
What do you want, please?
What is the Lao Chou Dong Huang?
A Lao Chou Dong Huang, that fried wang with Lao Chou sauce, mixed with chicken liver, snow pea, water shoot, and cooked wang. Mostly Wang.
Do you recommend it?
No, I do not recommend Fly Duck Song Hang Wang.
How about the Nuhu Swap Dam?
Nuhu Swap Dam, that flight swap and dam, and all brand new.
Well, at least it's new.
I don't know, let's give it a try.
Yeah,
we don't have.
Oh.
Well, he hasn't got it.
No new single swap dam.
Do you have a menu that has things that you have? Is this for your restaurant, this menu?
Well, yes, sir. Okay.
Maybe we should just try it.
We have anything
maybe
else
we could
on
just,
the menu.
I'll
you
tell
want
you what.
One from column A, two from column A, three from column A, or one from column B, two from column A, or two from column A, one from column B, or you just forget the whole thing.
Okay, we'll take it.
Okay, I give you one from column A, two from column A, three from column B, and one lock hang sap one dim dang, one dim dang hak one sap wok, and one dap one fried ham dang.
Oh, that's
dang.
Good. That's the fried. Good. Yeah.
But we
yeah.
don't have.
We don't have the good stuff.
We don't serve.
Can we switch maybe a couple of the ones from column B and bring them over to column A?
Yes, I give you a swang hap dang wang and switch it with lap dang hang wing, and then you have swang wing hap lang and dang hang wap swap.
That's a lot to eat, you know.
Oh, no, that's one dish. That's a very small dish, not too much.
I don't think I've had that. If you're willing to try it.
We don't have. We don't have.
But you just said you had it.
We did have it, but we don't have it now.
Why don't you just bring us what you would recommend? Just bring two somethings that you would recommend.
Two something. Fried something with noodle.
That?
We bring you that.
Okay.
Very good for the ugly, sad, lonely, sick people with the blood and the grasses all over the floor and hung the young mangum.
This is a nice place, but I don't think much of this waiter.
No,
I think he's just purposely giving us a hard time.
Well, it's hard to understand.
I don't even really think he's Chinese, do you?
I don't know what that means, but it doesn't sound pleasant.
He looks like he's exploding to me. He just keeps making a lot of noises. Maybe we'll just get whatever he wants to give us.
I think so, yeah.
Well, you just bring us anything that you like.
Okay, so very good.
Thank you.
My God.
It's extraordinary. You know, you meet the strangest people these days.
We don't have waiters like that in the country. I mean, you go down to the store to get some coffee and a donut. They might be a little ornery there, but I mean, at least they serve.
I'm so sorry. I mean,
yeah.
This is such
okay,
an awful
Okay, we got
way.
A 3-1-down soup for you. 2 fried egg rolls for you, 1 spare rib for you, 1 2 spare rib for you, and 1 wonton soup here in your wrap like this.
Please!
God, that stuff is hot!
These are the only clothes I have.
Here the egg roll for you.
Put it on the table.
God, what is the matter with you?
Jeez, it's all over the place.
I'm so sorry. Look, if we go to my apartment, I can give you
I want to get the heck out of here.
Oh! He'll slip down right
on his back. Get out of here! Get out! Get out!
Give him a little of his own medicine. Why would you do that? Dump the whole table over on him.
Look at this!
Bring up the point that in the first scene, Joe's words about her maids having died of the plague were very prophetic in regard to the second scene, because her maid was a servant, and the waiter is a sort of servant, and Joe says about her maid, it's impossible to find people one can depend on these days, servants one can depend on, people one can depend on. And indeed, in the second scene, that proves to be the case.
I must say that I do believe that in a psychological sense, the ordering of the food in a perhaps almost a religious sense, in the sense of a transubstantiation, the ordering of the food, the search for a dish that they can both eat, and their inability to find it, the inability to read the menu, the man's inability to lack of knowledge about what a restaurant is, what a Chinese restaurant is, and what the food is, all seem to be in a subliminal sense pointing towards the search for sustenance, the search for some line that would establish his reason for being there in the first place.
What of the Chinese waiters of this hostility which is directed toward this couple?
Well, this is an age-old question. Man has always dealt with, why did the storm wash away my field? Why did the flood come? Why did the drought come? Outside forces over which he had no control periodically seemed to be hostile. And thus religion was born.
And the concept of the servant as the master, the slave,
yes, oh yes,
the slave as the individual who actually controls the environment, is very much an ancient theme in psychohistory.
Another thing that occurs to me is that Joe says this is one of her favorite places. She has been in this restaurant before. She apparently likes it, and circumstances are different. They have changed. The evidence is manifest in that the waiter says, we did have this, but we don't have it anymore. And she talks about dishes that she's had here. She's obviously a devotee of this place, but things have changed since, I guess, the plague or
well, I
Ed's
think
arrival
it's,
or
things have changed for a very specific reason for her. And here is where
her
an
separation
element...
is one thing.
Yes, and I believe even more so the death of her maid. The maid who seems to be the person who she depended on far more than she depended on her husband, who seems
oh, yes.
to be clearly a peripheral figure in the entire
well,
proceedings.
Well, she says she depended on her maid.
And, exactly. And one gets the impression that it may be that her appearance in the restaurant is directly connected with the death of this maid, who perhaps provided far more food for Joe and far more sustenance than she was able to receive now that the plague has separated her from life mm-hmm. and sustenance, as it were.
A large river divides a country. A bridge crosses the river. At the end of the bridge stands a gallows and a court of three judges for the execution of the following law. Whoever comes to cross this bridge must first declare under oath where he is going and what his business is. If he swears to the truth, he may go on. But if he swears falsely, he shall be hanged on the gibbet at the end of the bridge. One day, a stranger drives up in a sports car and swears he has come to die on the gallows, and for no other reason. This puzzles the judges. They reason that if they let the man pass, he has sworn falsely, and therefore, under the law, ought to die. But if they hang him, he has sworn the truth, and then by the same law, they should let him pass. After conferring, they dismantle the gallows and jump off the bridge. Malka watches their bodies hurtling down the rapids. He climbs back in his car and drives on.
This is really exciting for me, being in a cab.
Yeah?
Yeah.
No cabs out there in the country?
No, sir. No, ma'am.
It's all right, you know. I am a man.
I am excited. No cabs at all. I feel like I'm in a gangster movie or something. Just going to sit back here and maybe follow that car.
Yeah, yeah, well.
He'll just take you wherever you want to go, and you don't even have to drive.
Mm-hmm. Isn't the park pretty? Well, you haven't seen it before, have you? No, of course.
No, this is nice. I didn't realize the city would have a... You know, a place like this with trees and where you can see the stars and everything?
Yeah, yeah. I always come here when I'm, you know, when I'm down or when I'm feeling really, you know, lonely. What's that scent you're wearing?
What? I wasn't aware that I was wearing any scent. Do I smell nice?
Mm-hmm, yeah. Oh, yes. Well, it's a very masculine...
Well, I guess it's just kind of naturally what I smell like.
Well, you know, I'm really not surprised.
I don't put any of that stuff on, you know what I mean? Like perfumes, I don't go in for any of that.
I wouldn't think that you need to, you know.
Well, you smell pretty nice yourself.
Oh, thanks.
I like the stuff that you're wearing.
I wear it here, too, behind my ears. When it mingles with the body heat, it takes on a very individual smell.
You guys new here in the city?
Thanks. We have each other to talk to.
Did you guys see the fight last night? Wasn't that a killer?
You want to hold it down in front, please?
Oh, well, if I was bothering you, yes, I'm really sorry, you know, because I get excited when I talk about things to people, you know what I mean?
Yeah, okay. Where did you get that shirt?
This shirt?
Yeah, that shirt. Well, you know, I love the way it's cut in through here. Oh, that's really...
Oh, my, that kind of tickles when you touch
you
me back over on my ribs. Yeah, I've always been ticklish.
Sorry about that. I made a wrong turn in there. I'm going the wrong way in a one-way street, so just hold on. I'll just turn the cab around here.
Hey, look.
Make a
turn. He's turning.
There you go.
I don't think he can make a turn on a street like this, can he?
I don't know. And maybe we should, you know, I mean, we could get out at the corner.
But why? No, the guy, he's going way too fast.
Sir? I think, you know, we should be headed the other way.
Wasn't that a red light? He just looked like it died to me. Hey, why don't you slow down a little bit?
Wait now, just wait a second.
He's got a sense of control here.
I have this terrible fear of speed. I just
have to... Just calm down. We got to get out of here. We got to get out of here.
No, I hate this.
He's going to hit that truck.
I'm going to be sick.
Try and get the wheel.
There's a very important line that Ed says, and it's that, you mean they take you where you want to go and you don't even have to drive? He's excited again by the strangeness and newness of it all. He's totally given up to the forces of life. He's trusting them. They're both trusting them to bring them home, and they are in the hands of another third party, another maniac, who is into violence, fights. He says, wasn't it a killer? He's excited by the killing.
I think it also should be pointed out that in the museum where they are going for cultural, spiritual food, they are driven from the museum. They are not allowed to absorb any. When they go to the restaurant for sustenance of a gastronomic order, they once again are deprived this and are driven by a figure who also degenerates into an ape-like or certainly chaotic state. And once again, in the third scene, where they are going for, perhaps you would say, a geographic sustenance, in the sense of trying to arrive at a destination, yes, as so many of us are, and are thwarted in this also. It seems to me, and at the same time are made ill in the process.
I think it's safe to say now that there seems to be a repetition of form, of variations on a theme kind of structure to this piece. The same play seems to be repeated over and over, the same kind of degeneration on the part of the intruder, and the same kind of loss of control on the part of the principals. I think that there is a play going on after all, and yet in all the scenes, life seems to be going on as in a normal time. And the fact that there would be sports going on, particularly of a violent, destructive nature, at the same time that a plague was ravaging the city, is, to me, a representation of Malka's high sense of irony and paradox.
Well, actually, I would say that although this may be true, since time began, the appearance of plagues in many civilizations frequently brought about all sorts of strange entertainments to take people's minds off the very tragedy that was taking place around them. And plague fights, for example, were quite well known in Romania, in and even before, in ancient Babylonian.
Yes, but wasn't it true that in those cases only people with the plague were allowed to fight?
This is true, and one of the interesting things I think you can point out in this play is that it is very possible that the curator of the museum, the waiter, and the taxi driver all are in severe final terminal stages of the plague.
What do you think Malka is driving at?
So this is where you live.
Mm-hmm. At last.
Yeah, it was quite a taxi ride, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Well, this is really quite a nice place.
I'm very comfortable here. Yeah, I like it. Well, can I fix you a drink or anything?
You mean
Scotch, gin, vodka?
Well, I'll have whatever you're gonna have.
How about a brandy?
Okay.
Okay.
That's. Mind if I just walk around?
No, please do.
Well, that's a nice view you have. That's the park out. Is that mm-hmm. the same park mm-hmm. that we drove through?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it looks a lot nicer from the top than speeding through on that, in that cab.
Yeah, I think so. Here you go.
Oh, that's kind of warm.
You like
it? Goes right down.
Yeah, you can feel it going all the way down inside you.
You don't even really taste it till after it's already down there, and then it starts filling your whole body, making it warm.
Mm-hmm. Say, listen, why don't we put on some music, huh? I mean, do you see anything there you like?
Well, I whatever you want to put on would be good. I don't know that much about music.
Well, I am so tense after today. I really think something slow would be nice, you know, kind of unwind.
Okay.
Ooh, here's something. I think you'll like this.
Okay. Yeah, that does sound nice.
Do you dance?
Well, I do just a little, maybe foxtrot or something. I never did much dancing before.
This is kind of music, you know. If I just love to dance. I haven't danced in so long. Would you mind?
Okay, if you want to.
Here, I'll just put the brandy snifter down. And yours right next to it?
I finished mine. I drank it right down, I guess.
Oh, this is nice.
I don't know. I hope I don't step on your feet.
Oh, I'm not worried. No, see? I mean, we don't even have to move our feet. We just gotta stand here close and... Oh, it's been a long time. Am I making you nervous?
No, it's all right.
I like it. You're much taller than my husband was.
Well.
Look, I'm sorry, you know, if I'm making you nervous. Is there, would you like another brandy?
Well, okay, if you're gonna have one.
Well, I tend to get very, very dizzy when I have too much to drink. I don't think I should have another one. I'm pretty relaxed. But I think you should have another one.
If you think so, okay.
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 You want to take a look at the rest of the apartment?
Yeah, that might be nice. Is it all right if I just walk around, take a look?
Sure. That's the kitchen in through there.
Right. Have your own kitchen up here, then?
Mm-hmm. Everything a body could need. Here's your brandy.
Oh.
You feel that going through you?
Yeah, it feels nice.
There's a bedroom, too.
Well, you have a bedroom up here, too,
mm-hmm.
then.
Mm-hmm. You'd like to take a look at it?
Okay, if it's all right, if you think it's okay.
I have an idea. Why don't you just, come on. Why don't you just stretch out on the bed in the bedroom, and I'll give you a back rub.
Okay.
You like that?
Okay. If you think it would be all right for me to go, you know, into your bedroom.
Why on earth not? I mean, we're grown people, aren't we?
Yeah. Boy, that's a big bed you got.
Mm-hmm. It seems so much bigger with just one person in it, you know. But why don't you test it out, see what it feels like?
It's real soft.
Yeah? You like a soft bed?
Yeah. Is this a fur blanket you have here?
Mm-hmm. Why don't you just lie down there?
Okay, I'm just going to stretch out then.
Well, lie on your stomach.
Phew. Boy, that does... I was tired. Been a long day.
Mm-hmm. Get all those nasty knots out.
It tickles a little bit back there.
You know what I bet it is? I bet it's the fabric.
How do you mean?
I bet it's your shirt. I bet if you didn't have your shirt on, you wouldn't be ticklish. Why don't we try? Why don't we see? Come on, roll over. Roll over.
Well, I'd probably be ticklish, you know, with it on or with it off.
It'd be a new experience. You know, I mean... Why don't you give it a try?
Yeah, well, most of this whole day has been a new experience, I guess.
I'm not going too fast for you, am I? One button, two buttons, three. This is a lot more fun than playing This Little Piggy Went to Market.
Yeah, this is fun.
Oh, God, what a nice body you have. Oh, I've got some kind of a crick in my back here. Would you mind rubbing it right here?
Right on your back there?
Yeah. Oh, that's nice. That's nice. Oh, God, I guess I'm tenser than I thought I was.
Is that the right spot?
Mm-hmm.
I kind of like just rubbing back here.
Why don't I lie down then, too? And here, let's get your shirt off the bed. That's in the way. Now, you just...
You have enough room? I can move over.
No, I'm fine. What kind of a belt buckle is this?
Well, that's a World War I belt buckle. I picked that up.
Isn't that curious? I wonder how that... comes off. Oh, what a clever little catch that has on it.
What are you doing?
I'm just Seeing how your belt works.
It's just a regular, belt. You just open it up?
Yeah, isn't that clever? Boy, this is a very cunning belt buckle. I really would like to have it copied and have one of my own. You know, this little belt on my dress, it's just a tiny little thing. It takes very tiny fingers to undo it, see? I mean, it just comes off like that. You feel good to me. Oh, God, you feel good to me.
Malka is brilliant in this scene in that he takes us through the five senses. Looking, we look at the apartment, we listen to music, we taste the whiskey. Finally, we feel, we get to the rawest of and the most inner of our senses. The moment of the back rub is the takes us to the climax of the play. All the threads of plot interweave and come back. We get the Jesus thread coming back in, which we had in the first act with the paintings of Jesus that Ed is so fond of.
I think it should also...
Now we have achieved the art. They are now the painting.
We might say that it is rather more a sensualist play in the sense that the senses that Dr. Behrens was talking about are so beautifully... presented for us at the end of the play, and when one looks back over the first scenes, for example, the sense of sight, so particularly called up in the museum, and the sense of time, which is many people believe the fourth dimension, is particularly brought out in the sense of his father and time and the fact that the museum, as we spoke about, is so directly connected with time. Then, of course, the sense of taste and the sense of heat, which so fills up the entire second scene, then the sense of speed and movement and terror and anxiety, which so much fills up the scene in the taxi, all culminating in the very pure, serene, and straightforward presentation of senses in the final scene.
Yes, and also in the sense of our yearnings, the urges that call us and that and through which we search for things, for understanding.
Yes, one has a sense from the very beginning of the play when
These
Joe and Ed
with
meet.
A calling, yes.
Yes, that they will see more and more of each other, so to speak, as the play continues.
Oh, yes.
It's a definite affirmation.
I think it's interesting to point out that in the final scenes, it is not until the very final scenes of the play that Ed finally assumes any assertive activity at all.
At the very, very end.
And only at the very, very close of the play does he start to touch her. Does he start to massage her back, and only at her urgings and her continuous encouragement. The fact, one, that he does change, I think, is a very upbeat and hopeful point of the play, which is rather surprising, again, when you think of Malka's a trauma.
Yes.
I think this is a clear example, Julian and Oscar, all of you, of a woman as Godhead. He says when they enter the apartment, she says, come to my bedroom, in essence. He says, I will, if you think it's okay. Do you think it's all right?
He also actually says the words to her, oh God,
that's right.
Oh God, a number of times.
That's right, and Jesus.
Which is really, it's as a matter of fact, the fact that this play was... The original production, as we pointed out, was indeed performed in church and in Latin. It becomes clear in this final scene why that took place.
What light does this play throw on the question of determinism and freedom as regards human affairs?
I think that the illusion of freedom could very well have been an alternate title to the play. It's so central to the play. Ed says in the first scene, I have nothing but free time. That is his perception of himself. The reality is that Ed, from the very beginning, is caught in an extreme current. His will, his intention, is the very thing that enslaves him. He is a slave to his intention to find his father. It predetermines everything that happens to him in the play. And he has no free time. He is not free.
Yes,
the loosening
once again,
of his belt buckle at the end gives us the illusion of freedom. However, the phone rings.
So it is clear indeed that he
But they
not
don't
free.
Hear it. They are too involved in the illusion of their freedom to hear the fact that they are not free.
My father died when I was 5. I was about to undergo a corrective operation for club feet. It was important that the surgery be performed as soon as possible. So my mother explained my father's absence by telling me that he had gone to Boston on a business trip. The family gathered at my home. Paintings were turned against the walls. A smorgasbord was served. Everyone spoke in hushed, muted voices. My mother wore a black dress with a veil. That evening, I was admitted to the hospital. After the operation, when I returned home with casts up to my hips, my mother told me that my father was dead. Many years later, when I was 21, I traveled to Boston for the first time. I'd met a girl from Boston who had been visiting her relations near my home on Long Island, and now I was going up to Boston to see her again. Upon meeting at the airport, we drove downtown to the commercial district, and I led my girlfriend through the hallways and offices of investment firms, insurance companies, corporate headquarters, and we wandered through plants, factories, and warehouses. She did not understand my compulsion, nor did I, but she good-humoredly went along with it. Then, on the last day of my visit, I persuaded her to picnic with me in a local cemetery. By now, afraid that she would think that I was unbalanced, I affected a bizarre sense of humor. It was only a joke. We spread our blanket under a tree in the middle of the graveyard and talked about our futures. She wanted to treat emotionally disturbed children, and I wanted to be a phys ed instructor. We ate sandwiches, fruit, cheese, and drank wine. I was happier then than I'd ever been. But when we finally decided to leave, I found that I was paralyzed from the waist down. Evening was falling, and there was no way that my girlfriend could carry me from the cemetery. Nor was there anyone else there to help. She said she would return soon, and left. I watched her walk down the hill. My father died when I was 5. I was about to undergo surgery on my feet. It was important that the operation be performed immediately. So my mother explained my father's disappearance by telling me that he had gone to Boston on business. The family gathered. A smorgasbord was served. Mirrors were distorted. Everyone chatted amiably. My mother wore a gaily colored blouse and a pleated skirt. She hugged me. Then I was taken to the hospital. After the operation, my mother told me that my father was dead. Years later, I traveled to Boston to visit a friend. From the airport, we drove directly to the commercial district where we spent my entire stay. She did not understand my obsession, but was good-humored about it. Then, on the last day, I asked her to picnic with me in a cemetery. Afraid she would think I was unbalanced, I affected an offbeat sense of humor. We spread our blanket in the graveyard and talked about our dreams. She wanted to treat psychotics, and I hoped to climb Annapurna. We ate stuffed hearts, blood sausages, oxtails, brains, pig's feet, and deer horns. I was happy. But when we decided to leave, I found that I was paralyzed from the neck down. There was no way that my girlfriend could carry me, nor was there anyone else there to help. She said she would return. I watched her walk down the hill. My father died when I was 5. I was about to undergo surgery. It was important that the surgery be performed right away. So my mother explained my father's absence by telling me that he'd gone to Boston on business. The family gathered. Champagne was served. Balloons cascaded to the ceiling. Papier-mâché streamers fluttered in the breeze from the window. My mother wore an off-the-shoulder gown, her breasts welling up from the bodice. A few musicians played for us. We threw back our chairs and danced a flamenco, crisply clapping our hands and clicking our heels, casting hot, scalding glances at each other, my mother brandishing a pair of frantically snapping castanets. Then I went to the hospital. After the operation, she told me my father was dead. Years later, I went to Boston. From the airport, my girlfriend and I drove to the commercial district where we remained for the balance of my visit. The last day, I asked her to panic with me in the cemetery. We spread our sheet on the ground and spoke of our dreams. She wanted to treat hopelessly deranged patients, and I wanted to be immortal. We ate parts of each other. I felt happy. But when it was time to leave, I found that I was buried under 6 feet of earth. It was dark. I could hardly hear the cries of my girlfriend, who couldn't find a shovel to dig me up. I listened for her footsteps to fade.